Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from AntiWar.com, and this is AntiWar News for Monday, October 31st, 2022. I hope everybody had a good weekend. The first story at the top of AntiWar.com today. Russia says that the U.S. is lowering the nuclear threshold by upgrading nukes in Europe. So a Russian official said on Saturday that the U.S. is lowering the nuclear threshold by sending an upgraded version of its B-61 nuclear bomb to NATO bases in Europe. So the B-61 is the U.S.'s primary thermonuclear gravity bomb, and it is being modernized into a newer weapon known as the B-61-12. So Politico reported last week, and I went over as well, that the U.S. told its NATO allies at a recent meeting that it is deploying the B-61-12, the upgraded version, to Europe to replace older bombs by this December. And that's a faster timeline than the originally planned deployment, which was initially slated for the spring. So they're speeding up the deployment. So Russia's deputy foreign minister, Alexander Grushko, he said on Saturday, quote, "We cannot ignore the plans to modernize nuclear weapons, those free fall bombs that are in Europe," end quote. So the U.S. has approximately 100 B-61s currently stored at air bases in Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, Italy, and Turkey. According to the Federation of American Scientists, the B-61-12s carry a lower yield and are more accurate than older B-61s. So Grushko said, quote, "The United States is modernizing them, increasing their accuracy and reducing the power of the nuclear charge. That is, they turn these weapons into battlefield weapons, thereby reducing the nuclear threshold," end quote. So the B-61s that are deployed in Europe are part of the U.S.'s nuclear arsenal, are part of the their tactical nuclear weapons, which have a smaller yield than strategic nuclear weapons. The U.S. is estimated to have 200 tactical nukes, while Russia is said to have about 2,000. So Russia has a lot more. But when it comes to tactical nukes, there's a pretty serious range in yield in kilotons. According to, you know, experts, they say that it ranges between 0.3 kilotons and 170. So that's a huge range. And then the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima, for an example here to give you a reference, had a yield of 15 kilotons. So even bombs that are bigger than what were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I believe Nagasaki was a little more, maybe about 18. Still, like, bigger than that could still be considered tactical. But I'm not sure what these B-61s are, but they're saying that the newer ones are a lower yield. And the plans to deploy the B-61-12s to Europe by December have puzzled experts as the accelerated timeline. It doesn't do much but raises tensions with Russia in the current tensions. It just seems provocative. But the Pentagon is insisting that the plans have nothing to do with the current situation, and they have denied the characterization of the Politico report. They didn't deny it outright. They didn't deny that these missiles, that these bombs are going to Europe in December. I guess what they're inferring at is that, oh, it just happens to be faster. They're readier, quicker than we thought. Then the question is, why speed it up? Like, why not just still wait until the original deployment? So another part of the upgrade is that it will allow the bomb to be carried by all U.S. and allied bombers and fighter jets. So from what I understand, the older B-61s can only be carried by certain planes. This upgrade is going to make them more versatile. And the revelation of this planned deployment, it came as NATO was holding its nuclear exercises known as Steadfast Noon, which should have concluded on Sunday. They were held from October 17th to the 30th. And the drills were hosted by Belgium and involved 14 NATO members and about 60 aircraft that simulated dropping nuclear bombs. This means, you know, the countries in NATO's nuclear sharing, where the U.S. keeps these bombs, with this upgrade, pretty much any one of their fighter jets or bombers would be able to carry these nuclear weapons. Okay, so the next one here. A flurry of drones attacks Russia's Black Sea fleet in Crimea. So armed drones, both aircraft and boat drones, attacked Russia's Black Sea fleet in Sevastopol, Crimea on Saturday. The Russian Defense Ministry said in a statement that Ukraine carried out the attack, which involved 9 aerial drones and 7 unmanned boats. The ministry said that both military and civilian vessels were targeted, and they're saying that just one Russian ship was damaged in this attack. And Russia accused the UK of being involved. They said British, what they called specialists, were involved by training Ukrainian forces. The Russian Defense Ministry said, quote, "The preparation of this terrorist act and the training of military personnel of 73rd Marine Special Operations Center were carried out under supervision of British specialists," end quote. So the 73rd Marine Special Operations Center, that's Ukraine's naval or maritime, whatever you want to call it, special operations forces. So the UK has denied being involved in the incident, but it's important to point out that the British have been training Ukrainian troops in the UK. And they reportedly, there's been reports that say the British have special operations forces on the ground in Ukraine training Ukrainians. This is reporting in the Times of London as well as the New York Times. It's never been denied, so it's probably true. So it's just good to point that out. And we know that the U.S. has been very intimately involved in planning Ukraine's counteroffensive. So I don't think it's outside the realm of possibilities that the U.S. or its allies, like the British, could be helping plan some of these attacks on Crimea. But we don't know. I mean, I didn't see any evidence put forward, but that's what Russia is saying. And Russia also accused the British of being involved in the attacks on the Nord Stream 2 pipelines over the weekend, which, of course, the British denied. But Russia said Sunday that it recovered and analyzed the wreckage of the drones that were used to attack the Black Sea Fleet. The Russian Defense Ministry claimed that the drones were equipped with navigation equipment that was made in Canada. Like most recent attacks on Crimea, Ukraine has not taken credit for the operation in Sevastopol. But there's little doubt that Kiev was responsible. It's pretty clear that Ukraine was behind it, but they haven't taken credit officially for really any of the attacks in Crimea, I don't think. And same thing with attacks inside Russian territory in Belgrade and Russian oblasts that border Ukraine. They don't take official credit. But the U.S. and its allies have said that they support Ukrainian attacks in Crimea. They've given them their blessing to attack Crimea because the U.S. has a ban on using the weapons they give Ukraine on Russian territory, but it doesn't apply to Crimea. That's not to say that Ukraine hasn't been using U.S. weapons to shell, Russian territory. I'm not really sure, but I know the U.S. says that they don't want them to do that, but that doesn't apply to Crimea. And Russia has demonstrated a willingness to really escalate in response to attacks on Crimea after the truck bombing on the Kerch Bridge, which connects the Crimea Peninsula to the Russian mainland. Putin ordered the most extensive missile strikes on Ukrainian infrastructure that have been seen since the war started. And Russia said that the drones that attacked Sevastopol used the corridor established by the grain deal that has unlocked Ukraine's Black Sea ports and facilitated grain exports. In response to this attack, Russia pulled out of that deal, that Turkish and UN brokered agreement, which I'll get more into in another article. But the next one here, this is from Kyle Anzalone. He wrote this up on Friday. The White House approves the 24th weapons transfer to Ukraine. So this is the 24th arms package that the U.S. has signed off on since the February 24th invasion. This one is worth $275 million, and it includes ammunition for the HIMARS rocket systems, howitzers. It also includes remote anti-armor mine systems. And Washington will also send Ukraine vehicles, small arms, and communications equipment. So this is through the Presidential Drawdown Authority, which allows President Biden to take weapons directly from Pentagon stockpiles, U.S. military stockpiles, and ship them right to Ukraine. So this is, since Ukraine invaded, according to the Pentagon, the U.S. has pledged $17.9 billion in weapons, just in weapons, to send to Ukraine or to purchase for Ukraine. They mostly give them weapons through this drawdown, but there's this other program where they buy weapons for them, and that takes a little longer to deliver them. But the Pentagon's saying $17.9 billion. What Kyle found is that there's a German think tank, the Kiel Institute, says that U.S. military assistance for Kyiv since the war started totals 27.5 billion. So that's a lot more than, it's almost 10 billion more than what the Pentagon has said they've provided. And it could be account for different types of military aid. You know, I can't imagine what can make up 10 billion besides weapons and heavy equipment and stuff. I mean, the training is part of it. Maybe this number also includes troop deployments to Eastern Europe or U.S. spending to replenish the stockpiles that it sent to Ukraine. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to look more into it. But this graph is really something. If you're watching, you see that. So the United States, 27.6 million. Oh, this is in euros, I believe. But euros and the dollar are not far off right now. So the U.S. is 27.6 million. Sorry. Billion in this graph. And then the next highest is the UK, which is 3.7 billion, not even close. And then behind them is the EU as a whole, and then Germany, Canada, Poland. Actually, Poland ekes out Canada and Germany. So Poland's right behind the EU. But still, I mean, it's really incredible just how much the US is giving Ukraine and how much more than any other country. But okay, let's see what the next one is here. The Kremlin says that talks on Ukraine should first be held with the U.S. So the Kremlin said Saturday that talks over the war in Ukraine must first be held with the U.S. as Russian officials continue to signal that they're willing to negotiate with Washington. So this is Dmitry Peskov. He is the Kremlin spokesman. He said that the U.S. and its Western allies have a say over what Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, could agree to, and he cited earlier failed peace talks. Peskov said, quote, Kyiv has a president, a legitimate Ukrainian president, Mr. Zelensky, and it is theoretically possible to reach any agreements with him. But bearing in mind the March experience, these agreements mean nothing because they can be immediately canceled at the dictation from outside, end quote. So the March situation, that refers to in-person talks between Ukraine and Russia that were held in Istanbul in March. Following the in-person meeting, there was more virtual contacts and a deal seemed possible, and the two sides reportedly reached a tentative agreement. But former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, he went to Kyiv in April and he told Zelensky not to negotiate with Russia. And according to a report in Ukrainian media, this is a Ukrainian newspaper, Ukrainska Pravda. Johnson said that even if Ukraine was ready to sign a deal, the West was not. And his visit was a factor in why a Zelensky-Putin meeting didn't happen. So this Ukrainian media report said that, among other things, Johnson's visit influenced the meeting not happening. So it's clear that at that time, also just judging from the rhetoric of the U.S., also Turkey said there were NATO countries that wanted the war to continue around this time. They thought a deal was going to happen. Turkey said that nah, these NATO countries want to weaken Russia. They want the war to prolong the war. And just a few days after that, Lloyd Austin, you know, declared that an American goal in the war. And that's when the $40 billion aid package came out. It was all after this. I think what Peskov is saying, you know, maybe exaggerated a bit, just saying that it's all dictated by the U.S., but he's definitely, you know, there's definitely truth to what he's saying. And then also on Saturday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that Russia was open to talks with the West and said they could be successful if Moscow's concerns were respected. He said that Russia is, quote, always ready to listen to our Western colleagues if they make another request to organize a conversation, end quote. So for weeks now, for maybe more than a month, Russian officials have been stressing their openness to negotiations, while the U.S. has rejected the idea of diplomacy, at least publicly. So Russia has always said that they're open to talks throughout the war, but really recently, they've been saying it a lot. Lavrov and Peskov, particularly, it was Saturday and Sunday that both of them said something about being open to talks. Russia's really throwing some signals out there, but then the U.S. on the other hand is throwing the opposite signals out there. So the White House said last week that there's no prospects for negotiations and that it's up to Zelensky. If they say it's all up to Zelensky when they will begin. Although that report about Boris Johnson going over there, and you saw who was the biggest, backer of Ukraine. It's the U.S. It's the U.S. that's leading all this. So I'm sure he didn't go over there without the U.S. blessing to say, don't negotiate. So they say it's up to Zelensky, but is it really? I don't know. But if it is, that's not good either, because he's really hardened his position on talks. After Russia annexed the territory that it controls in Ukraine, Zelensky signed a decree ruling out talks with Russia while Putin is still president, which is essentially calling for a regime change before negotiations can happen. So the lack of a diplomatic effort from the U.S., it comes after President Biden warned that the risk of nuclear Armageddon was higher today than at any time since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. On Sunday, Lavrov discussed the 1962 crisis, and he said a major difference between then and now is the fact that there were talks between JFK and Nikita Khrushchev, and those talks resolved the issue. He said, quote, Khrushchev and Kennedy found the strength to show responsibility and wisdom. And now from Washington and its satellites, we do not yet see such willingness, end quote. So that's the state of things. Russia's really sending some signals, and the U.S. is, just still saying that diplomacy isn't going to happen. All right, the next one here. Turkey says that it's in talks with Russia and Ukraine on resuming the grain deal. So Russia, again, it's pulled out of this grain deal, which has been a huge success since it was negotiated. And in an attempt to revive the deal, the Turkish Defense Ministry said that the Turkish Defense Minister is speaking with his Russian and Ukrainian counterparts. So this deal was brokered by Turkey and the UN. This is what happens when people try diplomacy. This deal until now has been very successful since it was signed in July. And I believe the first shipment left August 1st. Ships have been coming and going from Ukraine. Over 9 million tons of grain and other foodstuffs have shipped out of Ukraine since its signing. But unfortunately, now it is paused. Turkey said that, so under this deal, they created this coordination center in Istanbul that's manned by personnel from Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, and the UN. Turkey said that Russian personnel will remain at the center, but said that no Ukraine will be moving out of Ukraine's ports for now, for the time being. And the Russian Defense Ministry, part of their statement, they're claiming that the drones that targeted the Russian ships in Sevastopol moved through these safe corridors that were established by the grain deal before attacking the fleet. Moscow, again, they accused the British of being involved. So they're saying under this deal, Ukraine agreed to give safe passage to ships out of its ports, which were heavily mined. There's a lot of sea mines there, and they created these safe corridors. And then Russia agreed not to attack while the ships were coming out, or the areas that they're, loading. I'm not sure the exact details, but it's like the areas related to the grain shipments, they said they wouldn't attack. So the U.S. has, of course, slammed Russia for suspending the grain deal and warned that it could exacerbate global food shortages. President Biden called the move purely outrageous, and he said that there was no reason for them to do that. Russia, of course, hit back, said that the U.S. don't understand the situation and that they're making false accusations. But one thing that's worth pointing out is that the grain deal was already sort of in jeopardy. It was due to expire on November 19th, and it needed to be extended if it were to keep going. But Russia has been saying that the West hasn't lived up to its end of the deal. Another aspect of the deal was to ease sanctions, or not so much ease sanctions, just to facilitate the export of Russian agricultural goods, Russian fertilizer and grain, things like that. And Russia says that hasn't happened. The U.S. technically has exemptions for fertilizer and grain and agricultural goods coming out of Russia. But as history shows us, sanctions discourage international companies and banks from doing business with Russia altogether. Well, that stuff is still moving to some degree. Russia's saying, it's not enough. So they would like to see more. So who knows if they were actually going to not extend the deal over this, or if they were just going to try to maybe get some real sanctions relief out of the West to keep it going. But unfortunately, now it's suspended. Hopefully, it gets resolved. But you see what their response to that attack on Crimea. All right. So next one, we're shifting away from Russia, Ukraine. The next one here, the U.S. Air Force to deploy 6 nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to Australia in a move aimed at China. So this came from Australia's ABC News. They reported that the U.S. is preparing to deploy up to 6 B-52s to Australia. The U.S. will build facilities for the B-52 bombers at the Tyndall Air Base, which is just south of the northern coastal city of Darwin. So it's in northern Australia. The U.S. plans to expand the air base. It's expected to cost about $100 million, and it includes a parking area for up to 6 B-52s. The U.S. Air Force has said that construction will be completed by 2026. So it still won't happen for a little while, but this revelation comes about a year after the U.S., Australia, and the U.K. signed the AUKUS military pact, a 3-way military deal between the three countries. And it focuses on technology sharing, and they're going to provide Australia with nuclear-powered submarines, which would likely be used to patrol waters near China. After the signing of AUKUS, Washington and Canberra, they also agreed to increase the U.S. military presence in Australia. Last year, Australia's former defense minister met with Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, and said that the increased cooperation will include rotational deployments of all types of U.S. military aircraft to Australia. So we're expecting something like this to happen. And the B-52 deployment, it's the latest example of growing U.S.-Australia military ties, which some fear could guarantee Australia's involvement in a future conflict between the U.S. and China. And this ABC report quoted a guy named Richard Tanter, who's a senior research associate at the Nautilus Institute. He said, quote, "It's a great expansion of Australian commitment to the United States' war plan with China. It's a sign to the Chinese that we are willing to be the tip of the spear," end quote. And I think this applies, if you look at a map, Australia is pretty far from China, it's very far, about 2,500 miles, I think. That's just a guess. But, B-52s have a crazy range. So B-52s in Australia can easily fly to mainland China and back. But still, it's pretty far. But just that, it's a sign to the Chinese that we're willing to be the tip of the spear. Because when you talk about a conflict in Asia, if it doesn't go nuclear, a war between the U.S. and China, it's the Japanese, it's the South Koreans, it's the Southeast Asian countries, depending on what side they pick, they're the ones that are really going to bear the brunt of this. The Taiwanese, of course, if something really goes down. All right, the next one is from Jason Ditz. There was a big bombing in Baghdad. It killed at least 10 people and wounded dozens. A gas tanker bombing tore through eastern Baghdad this weekend, causing damage across the area. And at least 10 people were killed. The gasoline tanker was parked in a garage with an IED attached. People living in the area said the smell of gas was strong before the detonation. Iraqi officials initially said the explosion was an accident, though it is now generally accepted that it was a deliberate bombing. There's been no claim of credit so far, and an investigation is ongoing. Bombings have been a sign of ongoing unrest in Iraq. And it just shows how unstable things are there. And the U.S. still has a military presence there, about 2,500 troops, and they don't have any plans to leave, it doesn't seem like. All right, the next one, the White House is considering using Guantanamo Bay, Gitmo, to house future Haitian migrants. So this is according to a report from NBC News. The Biden administration is considering how to respond to a potential influx of Haitian migrants, floating the possibility of holding them temporarily at the Gitmo facility. I think a lot of people that are still there were said to be held temporarily. But, it reminds me of the fact that this is something that Kyle wrote about a few times, I know, that there's still Afghan refugees that the U.S. said they would take in just being held in like camps. I believe in Qatar, I want to say there's some there, but also at a U.S. military base in Kosovo. There's just Afghans just in a base, basically in jail, in a camp, just stuck at this U.S. military base. They can't get out in Kosovo. They're not going to the U.S. They can't go back to Afghanistan, just totally in limbo. And that's how I bet if they start sending Haitian migrants to Guantanamo Bay, they're going to end up in a very similar situation. All right. The last one here, this is from The Cradle. The U.S. is considering cutting military aid to Saudi Arabia. This is, again, an NBC News report that they're considering punitive measures against Saudi Arabia for the OPEC Plus decision to cut oil output by 2 million barrels per day. The report, published on October 29th, cites U.S. officials who claim that the Biden administration considers slow-rolling military aid to Saudi Arabia, including the export of U.S. Patriot missiles. So I guess they just want to delay missile shipments. So it's not really that significant. And the U.S. has recently taken Patriot batteries out of Saudi Arabia. But they might do some more things like that, maybe reduce their military presence in Saudi Arabia. But I don't know. I'm not convinced that they're really going to do much. I think after midterms and stuff, this all might just blow over. But anyway, that's it for the news for me. And if you notice, I did not mention our fundraiser. It's because we're done. And so thanks, everybody, for supporting us. It really means a lot. It's how we get by. But if you want to support the show without giving money, you can just subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe on Odyssey, Rumble if you watch the video, tell your friends about it, share it around, and do all that. You can contact us, news@antiwar.com. You can follow me on Twitter, follow antiwar.com on Twitter. But that's it. I'll catch you tomorrow with some more news. Thanks for listening.